Nice.
That's sort of
Tepid.
yes.
Okay, let's start the seminar today. It's probably the last physics seminar for this year. And on that note, we close with the seminar from PPD and probably we talk for further activity on that matter that Rich will tell us today. So,
Thank you for this opportunity, and welcome everyone. I'm Bridge. I'm the junior staff member of PPD. So, I mean, the title can be a bit provocative, but this is the objective of this work which I want to present here. It's democratizing dark matter constraints through reinterpretation and renormalization. For the people who are connected from outside and are not so familiar with this subject in the field of research, so we have this understanding of the universe, wherein you have the Big Bang and the CMB, and then the universe which you see in the current form. And on the right in this, you have our current understanding in of the major questions that we have. For example, what are the antimatter and the asymmetry between the matter and the antimatter which we notice in the universe? We have the hierarchy problem, and then we have also the what are the fundamental constituents of the universe currently? We don't know quite a bit of it. So do we really know? We can ask ourselves, do we really know what we know, what we don't know, when 95% of the universe is unknown? And how we have built this understanding is that mainly the today's cosmology is done using a set of equations. They're called Friedmann equations. Okay, you cannot see my pointer, but let me try. So here.
Even in the physical one.
No, physical will not work. So we made a point. Yeah, okay. So these are today's cosmology is done using a set of equations called Friedmann equations, written down in 1922. At that time, the understanding was that the entire universe is basically a dust of evenly distributed particles, giving the rise to the cosmological principle, which is that our universe is isotropic and homogeneous. And the concepts of the galaxies came much later. So this assumption basically allows us to simplify the Einstein field equation here, and under the assumption of isotropy and homogeneity, and with the only dynamic degree of freedom being the scale vector and the time. And then this is exactly the solution of the Friedmann equations, are exact solutions of the Einstein field equation. But before we detected CMB in 1964, we didn't take time seriously. And so the universe was considered to have the rotational symmetry, the space-time symmetry, and as well as the time translation symmetry. So that is basically, we don't have any beginning or end of the universe. So, but after the CMB, it was a realization that our universe does have a beginning. So the perfect cosmological principle was abandoned. So when we use Friedmann equations to interpret the data from the universe, you come to know to the conclusion that, okay, we know only about 5% of the universe, out of which like 70% is dark energy, and then you have dark energy, which is making the universe expand and accelerate at the late times, et cetera, and then you have a significant amount, which is dark matter. And when it comes to dark matter, we have compelling physics case and huge interest of the community, as you can see how the interest and the published papers are growing. So the main evidence for dark matter, which comes in, is from the galactic rotation curves. You have the CMB, the large scale structures, bulk clusters, gravitational lensing, and there you see some sort of empirical evidence of the dark matter. In addition, I mean, in the previous slide, which I wanted to mention was that So the lambda medium, which is called dark matter concordance cosmology, based on the Friedmann equations, are recently going through a crisis. The lambda medium model itself has 4.9 sigma tension, and you have Hubble tension, which is more than 5 sigma. And that all has to feed into these fundamental calculations and assumptions, which we do in determining the constituents of the universe. So cosmology is mainly our colleagues in cosmology are debating and trying to figure out how this should be tackled. But in case of dark matter, we do have compelling evidences and a lot of interest and a lot of papers. But somewhere buried in those papers are also papers which mainly highlight the and present challenges to the whole idea of dark matter. For example, this paper on testing the CDM and geometry-driven multi-way rotation curves model with a DR2 and DR3 paper. And if you want to go into the details here, you have this solid line in the Balanchine and Bloomer model, and the BG model represents a relativistic modification of the gravity and conceived as an alternative theoretical framework to explain the object electric rotation curves. And in the both cases, when you do the GR properly with the latest surveys of the Gaia mission, at the end of this, if you can read it carefully in this paper, this he says there's no need for the extra matter to account for the disk kinematics. So you have to read between the lines to say what they are basically saying. It would make an interesting read. I have some of the things. So the point is, we should keep all when we are doing this research, we should also keep an eye on all the other sides of the arguments as well. You have the dark matter community is huge, and if we want to account for it, there are like if we sell dark matter, there's 44,376 papers, which makes up for 1.7% of the entire archive database. Then, if you count, if you filter it with the experiment, then there are over 10,000 papers here. So, if you count all the distinct collaborations, major phases of existing facilities, the dedicated smaller experiments, which are currently operational, past as well as the funded future projects, the total number of searches is easily, I mean, total number of experiments are easily about over 80 and possibly well over 100, depending upon how granular you are with distinguishing sub-experiments within the larger umbrella and so on. So it's a huge community. And then in addition to that, you have a lot of different models and couplings which describe the dark matter phenomenology, do unified description of them as such, different dimensions for measurables, diverse range of experiments from tabletop experiments to collider and cosmology. And you have combining constraints from different experimental challenge and time-taking endeavor. I do know in our audience, we have dark matter experts who know much more than me and who have been working in this area for very long. But just to give an understanding of how this last point of how exactly combining constraints from different experiments is a challenging time. So how exactly do we build a collective understanding of this subject of dark matter? So you have model builders, which are mainly theoreticians. They develop specific models and define the parameter space, for example, mass and cross section that experiments should target. And from models, output is a phase space maps with a targeted constraint and so on. So, for example, this is a theoretical paper from 2014, which says that the fermionic dark matter Higgs portal and effective field theory approach, and where they basically map the output, the phase space map, and the targeted constraints that you can look for. Then that feeds into experiments, data analysis, and results. So you design and build an operate experiment based on those theoretical inputs. You perform data analysis and publish results, setting exclusion limits across targeted parameter space, and output would be the published exclusion limits. So here you have another example where you search for the dark matter with an energetic jet or ironically decay W0 fusion from the CMS collaboration, and where mainly all that particular parameter space is mapped experimentally, and there are searches which are done there. Then this particular individual searches from the experiment has to be fit into a bigger picture. So Then comes the part of the phenomenology. So taking published experimental results, reinterpreting them and renormalizing them across diverse theoretical models, and synthesizing the data into combined global exclusion plots. The output is the global parameter limits, the model testing results, etc. So here you have how the theoretical parameter space from there with the experiment result mapped into this area in the curve here. And this was a paper for the export for the dark matter effect with field theories versus soft realization. This came in 2022. So now you can see theory coming 14, one of the experiments doing research in 17, and then 22, it's fit in the global exploratory. Now, myself having some experience in the part of the experiment where I did produce some of the plots like this, where I was mainly calculating the sensitivity of certain analysis for with a specific dark matter model for the dark scalar or in the BC4 to BC5. I'll explain to you what exactly these are. But I was doing this kind of plots, for example, for a trigger algorithm which I developed, how that was changing the sensitivity of the experiment and so on. And then on the phenomenology side, we hosted one as one of the co-organizers of this meeting, which is Stable Interacting Particles at LSAB. We had results from many different experiments presented at that workshop, and then you combine them and try to make these global exclusion plots. And then I went through this process of how exactly these global exclusion plots are created from this published data and so on, and that's basically excruciatingly painful for people who know exactly how they know and have been doing for all their life and are experts in that. It takes time to build an expertise, but for somebody who doesn't know this, it takes a lot of time. So just to understand a typical dark matter model, how it can look like, we take, for example, the dark photon case here. So dark matter models are typically characterized by the coupling and the masses of the particles they introduce. So typical examples of that extension on the standard model scalar Higgs bohr has this particular form. You have a kinetic term, you have the mass term and interaction term. So the constraints are usually shown in the coupling versus mass parameter space in the plots like this. So for example, you have the coupling here, you have the mass here, and then you have different experiments feeding into that particular space, parameter space, and producing these limits. Now, scaling problem with the global plot is one thing which is a problem. For example, here you have different mass ranges from 1 to 10 to the power 5, and then here, in terms of if you zoom down to this particular area here, you would see it becomes quite busy. And doing that, zooming down and so on from the PDFs and the PNG plots gets complicated. Understanding these plots from where this experiment, which particular analysis this is feeding from, et cetera, it's hard to track down to the last result level. For the plot with a lot of data, you often must zoom in the plot to understand what's going on, but having these static plots has its limitations. Another problem that also gets highlighted when you have really busy plots like this. So now, when you have so many experiment results, so many experiments probing that and generating the data, you have the visualization problem as well of this increasingly busy global plots. So you have, it's basically the same parameter space. So you have the epsilon, the same model for the dark photon on the y-axis, and you have the mass on the x-axis. And here, this is mainly the area which is all covered by cosmology experiments and so on from astronomical measurements, etc. And then you have this mostly collider space covering. So you have from 10 to the minus 3 to 10 to the power 2, and here you have up to 10 to the power 18. So how exactly you can put it in this frame to like build and grow or understand? These are the same things. But to somebody, for example, a grad student looking at this, it's not so easy, particularly when we know, okay, where these dark matter constraints are coming from. There is so many different experiments doing similar type of analysis, but having different ways of putting it together. So, and just another example. So this year, for example, this physics briefing book for ESU, you can see there's a section chapter of dark matter which is done by the LSEVR, some working group, and you have like, I don't know, very little, less than 10 pages in that. In that particular 10 pages, there are these limits, the global limits, which are derived. Now, in order to be able to get to the real experimental result, which was used to create these global limits, you have insane amount of references and links which you have to see. And often it happens that the experimental output plots are much more different and not easy to interpret and convert into these global limit plots. So you have, for example, in these 10 pages, about 330 direct references in the chapter. So you keep on going, opening these tab after tabs for looking at what exactly is happening. Hundreds of individual LSE data analysis results, which are behind each line and each curve. So the things get busy there. So challenge in the diagonal interpretation process is, just to summarize, that it requires deep specialized knowledge of physics of each model, the software tools, and the scripts, which are used for this reinterpretation processes. And global limit productions are very hard to access or trace or reproduce. How these were created, which scripts were used, you take down their papers. Often you will have these links which are basically there with the paper submissions. When you go to this link, the links are not working, the software is not there, et cetera, et cetera. But if you want to run it again, that's another challenge. So then you have, other than that, only a small number of experts produce global reinterpretation plots, often in the narrow subdomains, as specializing in, for example, somebody specializing in the Rakuten models or action models and so on. And quite often, and I have talking with some of these experts, I realize that a lot of their effort often goes unacknowledged. And what all that has gone behind is the communication which they have to do with each experiment and trying to understand how that particular limit came and interpreting it and then putting it in the global plot. So in addition to that, there's also a sociological challenge which emerges here, because as community as highly diverse as this, when it tries to collaborate and build a shared understanding on this particular subject, how do you collaborate? How do you work? What's the best way? There are tons of communications which have gone into individual email exchanges which are not available. So that's not available to public. With these ideas, I mean, I was at a point where I could think, well, okay, it's a good idea for a project. Maybe there's something which can be done about it. So then I thought of writing a grant proposal, which reviewers couldn't refuse. But it's not just about the grant proposal. Then we have very intricate processes like PPD, bid review process, and so on and so forth, which I'm now getting to know about. So rather than writing a grant proposal, what I did was I tried reaching out to some of our colleagues, and mainly from this ISF program. I'm not sure if Andre is connected today, but he is Andre. He was a master's student from Kiev. And for 3 months, he worked with me on this project last summer, funded by the ISF project from NSF. And it was absolutely a pleasure to work with him, although I always used to be worried, because I mean, he is in Ukraine, and then he would not have electricity for I don't know how many days in between, and then there are some bombs falling in the neighborhood and so on. So it was you have to be always on an edge when waiting for the next call. Fingers crossed, I hope he's okay and everything, but it was absolutely fine, and it was a good effort made by him on this. So our solution is basically this dark matter life portal for all the challenges which I described. Now, if you can imagine, I did manage to get my hold on this very official looking domain, which is darkmatter.web.sun.ch. It was not so particularly easy to have that, but I think this gives the project a sort of official gravitas which can bring the community together. Now, what this is about, I'm going to try to show you some of the features of that, but we do have, for example, about the dark matter, how to add your resources, how to add your results. So when a new analysis comes, how the results can be added and so on and so forth for further integration. And then you have the plots. You also have, for example, model explorer, some details about that particular model and how that feeds and relates and connects to other areas and etc. So then you have, for example, I would like to show this example that when you basically go to one particular classification, and I will show you different classification of different models, how they are organized. So for example, let's say we pick up this light dark matter coupled to dark photon model. And so you get this description of the model, the detection strategies, et cetera, et cetera. Once you do that, I mean, if you you can also look up the formula, the taxonomy of it, et cetera. And then these are the kind of plots which are available in the public domain if you want to basically see that from different publications and some of the latest publications on that. But if we want to combine the steps, it can, in theory, it can look very easy to combine these plots together. But then when you go through and try to dig up these limits from each paper they came from, try to dig up that particular data and put together in a single picture, that was a massive amount of work. And understanding it, how exactly this is. So, I mean, this looks like something like that. I will show you some of the features of how this can be organized. But if you, for example, so here you can also have the classification, you can group the data by collider experiment severity, astrophysical cosmology. So if you zoom into this collider space, here you have this collider space plot. And if you notice here, I mean, a lot of experiments from different fields, which I have not even heard the name before, they are putting this. And then, and further zooming in, you see this particular limit, which, you know, overshadows a big area of all the collider space. Now, where this, I mean, this has not been published in any other plots before. So if you zoom in, this particular limit comes from some very reputed experiments, actually. So the X-ray constraints of the dark photon trident and integral and the AMS2. So these are the two papers. And I mean, if you cannot take it lightly, if you take lightly the AMS02, then same thing would not be happy about it. So then, I mean, you have to take this constraint very seriously because this is like excluding sort of almost all the region of the paradise space. Now, this is one thing, some examples of it, and then, you know, we can debate about it. But that's the key thing here is that how we can have an open, transparent, and collaborative global limit framework. Motivation, I mean, we have, for example, so how Linus, when he created Git to manage the growing Linux kernel of 40 million lines of code, how difficult it must have been to trace the history of the Linux kernel, how that was, the different contributions from different people. I do remember somewhere buried in this 40 line of code, I once created a bug report for a Linux bug, and then that was translated into a single line, which basically is somewhere there in the Linux code. Hard to trace still, but at least it is there. So what it does, Git was enabled a distributed collaboration, transparent history, and a community-driven review. And that's something which you can rely on here as well. So we have created these public and open repositories. The source code and as well as the data are available both at the GitHub and the Git lab at CERN. And this is ensured, designed to ensure collaboration with reproducibility and shared ownership. So nobody owns it, everybody owns it. And we would like to ensure transparent contribution workflow. So for example, when new data points enter the global limit framework, they can enter via pull requests or merge requests. Experts should review what happens to that, and that particular discussion should be open, publicly documented through these Git and request conversations. We can also use Git raise issue features to make raise new requests for the features for the portal, et cetera, et cetera. In addition to that, what happens when you are, for example, you're taking one data from the experiment and translating it, in between there are a lot of like piece of code and scripts which goes into that. So how exactly those can be managed? So, well, and because anyway, there would be a new analysis in that, and you know, there would be more data pipelines on that. So you also want to sort of make this whole process automated so that you have you can have these interpretation scripts and global experience plot algorithms become part of the CI/CD pipeline so that this whole process can become automated. And then there are maintenance, some maintainers for that. And that also can be updated through PRs and MRs. And for example, coupling MRs for a particular model, ensuring that you have consistent reproducible output. And for versioning and citation, one way would be each tagged version of the project is archived on Zenodo and generating a DOI for long-term preservation and citation. So that contribution of all the contributing authors, they would be automatically becoming the part of the author list who have committed to this particular repository. And I would like to show some of the features, if you allow me to, by going to the web. Here, let me
okay. Get out of the full screen and then click.
So, yeah. Okay. So, this is our portal. As you can see, we have the About tab, which explains how it is. I had put my, originally to begin with, this is hosted at the Sun IT infrastructure, and the project is created as a group project. So there's a group email ID, which can be used for sitting there, and that is what I had put in. I didn't want to put my name here, but then the official LSCC conveners, they said that, okay, this is not reviewed, and so on, so it would be nice your own email ID, not a group ID, because it was looking too official, which I understand. And also, you have to put a notice that, okay, the numbers are not reviewed. So what exactly some of the features are, you can select, choose your model, and then the model classification itself can be debated. How exactly do you divide this model? So cosmic models, velocity classes, or interaction portals, or model frameworks, or any respect. And so, for example, that in order to understand it better, you can check out the Dark Matter Explorer. So, you know, cosmic, based on cosmic blob velocity, you can have CDM or warm dark matter or hot dark matter, etc., etc. A little bit about that. Then you have the portal framework, wherein, okay, you send your model in the dark sector, and how are the different portal frameworks, what are their key couplings and so on, and then, you know, different model frameworks based on which theoretical models, simplified models, extended sectors, etc., etc., and then the candidate spectrum. So you can choose which dark model you want to choose. For example, here you have the list. Now I have a lot of data and which I can pull up and then create these models, but I would not want to do that, because then the whole point of having this process as collaborative as possible, so that the model owners, or the people who actually know these models properly, can use it. That would be the good thing. So for example, I have created this dark photon. So when you click here, you see a little bit about how it relates to other classifications. For example, velocity class, how can be the framework mapping, key parameters, portal relations, etc., and so on, and then you can have this. Now, this problem of not being able to zoom, this is a dynamic, so you can zoom in. I mean, even to the busy plots, you can see how the classification and so on. There are different ways of seeing that. So all the data from wherever these numbers have come from, you can check and then click on it. So you can basically have that. You can do different ways of classification here. You can group by all or the experiment type. You can choose the detection type, detection as a direct or indirect method. You can do the time frame, whether there was past constraints, recent or future planned experiments. There are some models that take assumption that the dark matter already exists. So that's also a way of classification for that. And then, for example, you can hover on it. You have the link of that, and then you can click and you directly go to where this particular thing is this is taken from. You take it, and then we would also like to have inbuilt scripts in a way so people can immediately from here go to see how, from where these limits come from, how they have been translated and put it into this limit framework. So then you can directly access this. I mean, to just to go to one model and try to look at all the places from where these limits have come from, it can take a lot of time, especially for somebody like me who is new, who is just exploring, trying to find out which analysis I want to do in Atlas, looking at the parameter space, that what has been excluded, what is covered, what is not covered, et cetera, et cetera. So that's something that can be very useful for a new PhD student and so on to understand this, but also to trace how we are progressing in this field. What are the new limits which are coming from where? not having to wait for 5 years for the global limit plot to be created. So 2017 was the experiment, and then the first time it was put it in the global limits in 2022. And there should be a faster process for that. It should not be based on some people who are experts to put in this global limits. Now, this there are many different ways. So we have, for example, have built a portal where experiments are encouraged to upload their analysis and plot data mainly. We would like to integrate that with this visualization framework, because you don't have the visualization framework in the app data. So we'd like to integrate that and have these results also shown into this. This is something, because I mean, as PPD, we are involved in so many of the different aspects of the dark matter research on the collider, as well as hosting our own experiments here. This is something which can also be sort of a uniting factor, in which we can all pull in our efforts. And I'm very, very happy if people would like to contribute, to join, be part of it, etc. So this is, I mean, how exactly how to add your results and how to contribute, etc. How to pull up here. There's some of the things links to the GitHub and GitLab repos. So with that, I think I have covered all I wanted to say about this. I open the floor for discussion. I was hoping this session to be more discussion. I do hope there are questions you have, and then we can do the discussion. So just to summarize, there are still challenges. There's one thing is Hilbert parameter space, heat model parameter space. Model classification itself is very challenging. How do you do the proper classification? There can be differences in that, but those differences, everything can be changed. How do you do the classification? Somebody can create a PR. This is a better way. So this should be discussed. How do we account for uncertainties in these exclusion plots? That's a major challenge, because each analysis, but compares this exclusion plots with certain uncertainty, certain confidence levels, 90%, 95%, whatever. The way we handle uncertainties in the collider space is completely different than how it is done in the cosmology analysis and so on. There are huge differences in that. How do you unify that? How do you put them together? And at the same time, we also need to be very, very careful with what and how we are excluding a region. So that's something which needs to be very careful. But these are some of the challenges which I cannot tackle myself. It would be contribution and involvement of the experts who really know these things, and so that we can build a conception of how this should be tackled. Thank you very much.
How is the discussion going to be? So the questions first then.
Yes.
Okay, so Joe.
Yeah, so first of all, can I just say I absolutely love this.
Thank you.
This is one of the most amazing things that I've seen in my, relatively early career, but this is like the kind of thing that I wish that I could have had as like a PhD student, or like when I'm writing a grant proposal, is like this sets context for kind of everything in one place, and I think it's just absolutely incredible. So like I'm interested in the model description part, because so you have like these, you're kind of scrolling past it pretty quick, so I didn't get to see exactly what's involved in there, but you have like nice little bits of like the Lagrangian for like the particular model, and then you give like a little bit of context around it. Is there like a sort of like extra data that could tell you something like, okay, this is like all the information that you need to have leading up to like if I wanted to like run a simulation, like if I wanted to do like look for a fermionic absorption of dark matter in my detector. It was done in like a xenon-based detector, but I want to look at it for like helium or for argon or something like that. Is there something like that where like in the model description it has like all the information that you need up until that point where you have like this is basically everything that you need from the theory side for you to chuck it into some sort of simulation so that you can run the same analysis or run like an expected limit on this particular model, but in my detector. Is there something like that,
So,
or is
no, I mean, we don't have it, but it would be great to have you on this, and we can build on the top of it and have inputs on this. But yeah, this it makes sense. I mean, and it's a great idea, and we should try to find out a way to how to integrate it and put it into.
Because that's like, when you want to like have let's say like an experiment like DarkSci that's like kind of building up right now,
yeah, exactly.
And they want to have like put together all of these like studies to say, okay, like this is where we expect to be for like all these different dark matter candidates that are not WIMPs, but they kind of have this like unique sensitivity to, because they're maybe slightly lighter than WIMPs, but
yeah.
Like the whole of the community for direct detection is focused on WIMPs for so long, right? This is exactly the kind of resource that like, if that functionality is added, like you make so much, like you make so many more experiments, so much more productive. And I think it's just, the potential for it is amazing if it's not already in there.
I mean, so yeah, I mean, we have a prototype, but I mean, these things need to be there, and I mean, it needs, you know, some certain thoughts,
yeah,
input from the community, effort as well, and so on. So I mean, this is something which it's, I mean, this can also be a good contribution as such from the PPD side to the whole community of this. That's okay, because we do have expertise and we do talk to experts, we have our own experiments based on that. That can be something which can be a very solid PPD project contribution posted there. And so, I mean, yeah, as for the classification, I mean, I brainstormed a bit with James as well from our department. And so mainly in the beginning, we had this mainly interaction portal framework. So for example, BC1 to BC11, I mean, how the BSM classification has been done, how those relate to each other and so on. There's something which is this afterthought. And then what made sense for us right now is to put like sort of this sort of classification. But yeah, I mean, everything needs to be added and changed, and all the data needs to go in there. So these are like all the different BC1 to BC11. And there are like, you will see there are experiments which produce plots which cover multiple of these classifications in a way. So there are, for example, parameters which relate to different couplings. And these two couplings can be of two different models. And how do you relate that? How do you translate those experiment results into different things? So that's something which, you know, we can use that. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. Please, let's continue to follow up. I mean, yeah. Follow up with the discussion. And so that we can...
Honestly, if I have time to spare, I would love to work on that. Like, that's... Like, yeah. I would kill for that. It's so
perfect. Yeah, yeah, thank you.
I think James is connected. If he wants to ask...
Yes, James has a raised hand.
You should go.
All right. I mean, some of this has already come up, of course. I mean, clearly, this is I'm very, very fond of this. I think it's got a huge amount of use for colliders and cross community discussion. I mean, from the collider perspective, it's a bit like a natural successor to what was DM tools at Brown, which is where a lot of this kind of thing was stored. I know a good chunk of the direct detection stuff is at Slack, so we should probably think about the overlap and interface there a bit more. Your comment about the model classification is right, I think. I mean, I think there's no perfect way, and there's always going to be some degree of overlap or kind of messy interfaces inevitably here. Partly because different communities use similar but different models, and partly because they think about them in a different way, even when they're the same model. So you kind of need to maybe not just provide the Lagrangian, but also provide, we need to provide the kind of sufficient information to contextualize for the different communities. And this is, of course, one of the reasons for trying to bring the communities together, and PPD is a good place for that, I think. Joe, your comment also reminded me, I mean, I think there is a longer term discussion on kind of how far to take this. I mean, you could also push it in the, you know, how... You know, clearly we could link to the LHC Dark Matter Working Group's repository of bad graph models, which is probably the collider equivalent of the direct detection things you would want. But you might also want to push it more into the, you know, can we reinterpret, or can we do we have the information to tweak the models a little bit? You know, to say if I tweaked my benchmark, or if I varied the assumptions, how would these things move? There's a lot of scope for extending it in that direction, but that of course would require quite a bit more thought. But I like you, I'm very excited about the thing here. I mean, I'm going to plug my doodle poll here for discussions for things that cut across dark matter, things that cut across communities, and this is clearly one of them. As Bridge knows, I'm a fan. All right, that's my not particularly well organized list of thoughts. Sorry, guys.
Thanks, James. And so just to put, I mean, the first time I presented this to the public was this week only on Monday. We had the document for UK community meeting. So I presented there where you had, I mean, non-collider people as well as the collider people doing the talk and so on. So feedback has been good. And let's see how we can follow up on all that and how we can have more contribution.
Yeah.
I was wondering what your thoughts on backward compatibility were. So let's say there are like 1,000 models already in the repo, and then you add another model which then adds a new category, and that means that that particular category will then be added to all of those existing models, which is going to be a lot of work. So how are you thinking of tackling such an issue with respect to previous versions and so on?
I mean, you meant to say, in this classification, if we have new model which we add up, then...
And that introduces a new classification, yeah.
That introduces a new classification, then you add the classification as well. It's quite possible. I mean, so, but for that, I mean, if you read the BSA, Beyond Colliders Working Group meeting, they did quite a good job of classifying, like, I don't know, hundreds of models into these 11 categories. But that is mainly only the portal framework models. So, in these 11 categories which are there. So you can, based on the coupling in the mass and then certain correlation between these models, you can classify, have this classification. So from BC1 to BC11, there is a classification. So, I mean, community from the phenology side is also attempting to sort of have it in a coherent classification of different models, but it's, I mean, it's done in these different telos. For example, the Beyond Collider Working Group is not necessarily interacting with all the other cosmologists and so on in terms of classifications and so on. So, I mean, this has to be tackled by the community and how classification should be, et cetera, et cetera. We can only, like, you know, base whatever this is based on the inputs and how users want it to be.
Sorry, did you have a follow-up?
No.
Okay. Mine is just more of a comment. I'd like to echo again what Joe said, that I think this is, and I've said it to you before when you first showed it to me, this is fantastic and I think it's a really useful tool. I would though like to, you know, we need to caveat with this, we need to be careful, right? Like your last slide of, you know, we need to make sure that we interpret systematics or, sorry, uncertainties consistently and, you know, 95% versus 90%, because we don't want to oversimplify this, right? This is very complicated. All experiments do things slightly different model classifications. We don't want to just paint a picture that, oh, it's all excluded, because then what the funding agency comes from is like, why am I going to fund you because it's already excluded, right? So we have to be a little bit careful about how we present this and not oversimplifying the situation. So this is just more of a, maybe, sorry, James, this is a comment for you. When we're sort of thinking about the discussions moving forward, I think this is something that we have to, like, have as on the agenda as the things that we discuss in these.
Cautions or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So, we just need to be careful. Like, you know, you said, we need to be careful about what we're excluding. That's exactly the point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And actually, I have a follow up on that too, because I mean, when we're talking about like I can name an example right now of where there's tension, even just within the wimp dark matter direct detection community. Mm-hmm. So you have like an experiment like LZ, which I mean, I was on LZ. And then you're so having this competition with an experiment like Xenon and Anton, who report their WIMP limits in fundamentally different, maybe not fundamentally different ways, but like there's like, you know, an agreed upon sort of community paper that says, okay, yeah, you should do this thing where you like report your limit and then power constrain it at the minus one sigma, like blah, 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 blah. And like these are, you know, decisions that have been made, but then Xenon Anton kind of went in a slightly different direction more recently.
Yeah.
And like, so when you're trying to look at, you know, their plots, or like, you know, like if you're going into like, you know, like, you know, WIMP direct detection, dark matter, and then you're seeing, you know, curves from, you know, LZ and from Xenon, like they're going to be like, you have to sort of, sort of have that understanding when you're looking at this. Or when you're looking at a plot that shows all of their limit curves, which is exactly the point that you were trying to make, I think, right? Which is, like, you need to contextualize it. But I'm wondering if, like, maybe when you're drawing these curves, right? So you have like a sort of you know, like a shaded in region that says, okay, like this was the, these are the limits that have been sort of placed by all of these collaborations. But if then you were to have maybe like a total, like, you know, like this is, this has been what's been ruled out, and then have like a scale for like, you know, the alpha setting on those fill values, you kind of scale that according to the confidence level. Like, so basically when you're talking about xenon who like power constrains at their median, right, then, you know, that's a slightly stronger constraint. So it doesn't go down as far, but it's going to maybe be like a thicker color on this plot. And then when you take a total, then it'll just be like, you kind of have this like kernel density estimated curve that has like the shading is like, to what degree of confidence has it been ruled out? Which, you know, it might contextualize things a little bit better in one spot.
I'm glad that this session is being recorded, because then I will be able to go through your comment on this and then come back to you on this and then follow up and then so that we can implement this. It's absolutely, we need to do that. And even then, for example, I went to this plot, so on the question of how these couplings are represented. So for example, in this case of epsilon, there are papers which had epsilon squared. There are papers which had like one root over epsilon, I mean, different logarithmic scale or some different scales which are there. And they were not like translatable easily. And that's you have to like read through the paper, read through the text, and then try to understand. But then paper data is not still, I mean, there's still a lot of papers. There are some theory, I mean, collider papers who are putting the data, plot data in the Hive data portal, but a lot of data is not there. So then I had to put in some tools through which you extract the data out of the PDF, but then also, you know, check it. So, I mean, yeah, this is the other thing which we can like really solve with having a...
So what you're saying is we should write an LLM.
Universal
ChatGPT
rotations, yeah. We can have universal rotations and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thanks. Yeah, I agree with that.
More questions?
I think there's another comment, and another thing to also, like, we need to also make this clear that this is always, like, it's always, like, a benchmark model, right? Like, so, like, even, for example, like, for the, you know, liquid argon is not sensitivity, not sensitive to spin dependence, right, because it has no nuclear spin. But that's only when you're comparing the benchmark model of the leading term. But actually, if you consider loop terms, there is some spin dependence, and some experiments might actually be sensitive to that. So it's always also, you've got to make it clear, I think, when you're sending exclusion curves, that, you know, it's always with respect to a benchmark, and it's not just saying we're not sensitive to any dark matter at all in that respect. It's just compared to this model. So maybe this is already in here, like, quite explicitly, but just also another comment that we need to think about. We just need to tread a little bit carefully, I think, when you're bringing together everything, you know.
Any limit which I put in there, I don't want to be just putting it in there. I would like to create a merge request where people are reviewing it. People are reviewing it. Somebody is clicking on, yes, this looks good, merge it, and there's a proper process to that.
Yeah.
This is why, I mean, I've not filled up all the plots. I've just kept one as a, you know, as a prototype, so that people can put in, and then somebody merge it, somebody reviews it. There's a conversation about it, which is recorded.
Yeah.
Are there any on Zoom? Tim?
So this process of reviewing, being very familiar with that process for reviewing merge requests, that usually requires a decision about who makes those choices. So how are you looking to, are you going to start by making all those choices, or are you going to
I want these choices to be made by the community. So I would like to have, I don't know, working group where people who are developers and maintainers of this, consisting people who are phenologists, who understand models, and so on and so forth, making that decision and going reviewing through that in that particular area of expertise. So somebody who's expert in that model, this model. So I particularly would not want to make that call, because that you know, gives up the whole idea of open and collaborative and so on. So, yeah.
Somehow, I mean, so you're not going to be a benevolent dictator for life for this system, like Linus Torvalds.
Absolutely, would not want to. This is hosted at under a proper official project, not my personal repository in any way whatsoever. So even if I'm not there tomorrow, the project can be full. I mean, there can be multiple people who can be owner of that project, and then it can continue. Similarly, the GitHub repo, the GitLab repo, they're all public. It's not under my ownership.
Somehow got to recruit all now. You somehow have to recruit people for these roles. Is this the start to that, or is that this?
I would like this to be driven by community.
You need people to volunteer.
I mean, what I can do is take more students in the summer and time, go through the global limits which are already there. And then put them, because then I would have a reference that, this will be taken from there and so on. Something like that. So I build up more and so that it attracts more community engagement and so on.
Did you get a good response at DMUK for this?
I think it was a very good response. For example, Catherine from Escape from Manchester, she also was very encouraging and applauded and would like to put in some resources from the Escape and so on, hopefully. And so I think it depends how those comments and translates into action. So that's something which has to be seen. But I think verbally it was very encouraging.
James said that he has his hand up.
Please, James, go ahead.
Just to add perhaps to Tim's comment, I mean, for some areas, this exists better than others, I think, right? I mean, for the CLIDA direct detection interface, we kind of have documents outlining how the translation from one area to another is done, and how to go from kind of a coupling space for us to a scattering cross-section, or from a coupling space to the epsilons that the light dark matter use. I think probably you want this kind of caveat references built in. You're certainly right that there are kind of conventions within communities, but between conventions, between communities, that isn't always the case, or there is some tension where people have different conventions. I don't think that Bridge wants to do all that. It should be community driven, but it probably needs to be wider than just, the individual communities. Since that's half the problem, in that that's one of the reasons why why everything doesn't exist on the same in the same space naturally already to some degree. And this is before we start thinking about the cosmological astrophysical side, which I'm not really expert enough to comment on. But clearly that's difficult. That's a trickier area, both from connections and from, conventions with things like systematics.
So I kind of following up on the community engagement. I mean, is the ideal situation where you have, so this is open to the entire, to the entire community, or all of the communities, I suppose. And then whenever there's a publication, so the second it hits the archive, in an ideal world, representatives, maybe the people who wrote the paper within those collaborations, publish on the archive, but then also, have a separate, blurb with their, their data, and then they just upload it directly.
Yeah.
And then
they don't want to upload it here, they want to upload it in a Hackbit portal. That's also fine. We can have ways in which that creates automatic.
You can kind of make it as smooth as possible. Because I can imagine that if, a collaboration the size of, I'm speaking from within the direct detection community, a collaboration the size of LZ, Dark Side, Xenon,
yeah,
or XLZD in the next generation. If you start interfacing with them now, we have Ashley here who's on Dark Side, and I can certainly try and talk to people on LZ if there's interest in getting people to kind of just make this a standard thing. So once you get the ball rolling with some of the bigger players, then maybe others will follow suit in the future, and then it kind of just it gradually becomes a standard thing. Are you reaching out to community collaboration?
I started to reach out to, I hope we have as broader discussion as possible in the PPD and so on.
Yeah.
And then we sort of see how we reach out to, for example, we would like to have, I mean, we have proposed and hopefully it would be there in the next year, early next year, January, February, a dedicated discussion with the LSC, dark matter community and conveners and so on. And it was also mentioned, so for example, last month there was a LHC BSM working group meetings, and in that also this was mentioned by one of the person from the LLP side who presented in their talk. So the guy, I don't know if you know, so it's there in her slides that as an effort from Raul that okay, we are working on this.
Okay.
So yeah, this would be something, how we reach out to, how we increase engagement and so on, there's something that we have to figure it out. Yeah.
I mean, I kind of think it kind of has to be through word of mouth at this point. Like, I mean, there's just got to be like foot soldiers who are like, I'm happy to volunteer to be one of those
please.
People because I think this is awesome.
Please, please give these talks to wherever you would like to, so that you can attract more community engagement.
The student aren't connected or
no, but
he
couldn't connect. He had moved to.
It would have been nice to hear from him.
Yeah, would have been nice to hear.
Yes.
I had messaged him and then asked him and inquired if he would be able to connect. So, but he couldn't.
Yes, Tim.
So, having been a bit involved with HepData in the past, I have very useful platform for storing this.
Sure.
I guess the difference, the thing that this does that HepData doesn't do, apart from the interface making it easy to use, is having a standard format for or a standard way of representing the limits.
Yeah. And there you have each plot, each paper having their own
yeah.
plot data.
And so they have the data there, but it's in different formats. I'm just wondering, are you, as well as showing the plot, can you provide the underlying
data
in a way that you can download download it all and
so add your data, download it.
Okay.
So you can have all it in JSON format.
I'm thinking that we then have, because at the moment this is plotting things, it's probably not suitable directly for a publication, plotted like this.
Yeah.
But I'm imagining you come with a new measurement. You want to show all the other measurements on the same thing. We've done this many times in Atlas. So you want to, if you can download all of these, and then it makes that job of producing those plots much easier.
Yeah.
Maybe later on you can have make a publication quality plot.
Exactly.
Out of it.
So this is why the whole data and the repo is public enough. So you create your own branch, you test with that, you upload your data, see how you know this measurement would come in the global limits. It's up to you how confident you are whether you're putting that in the global limit, but we can provide all the references, text, etc. just needed. You can use that for publication if you like, because then everybody has to. And this was also one thing when I was doing this this work. I had spent months in trying to figure out some of these theoretical traditions tools, which didn't work, most of them, to try to create these limits. So for example, these limits, how exactly I fit it in this extruded limit. So these are zoomed in regions and so on. How these tools work, I spent 3 months to create these plots because some of the scripts were not there and so on and so forth. So that would be also an objective. So okay, if somebody has, for example, a tracking algorithm that would increase the sensitivity of one particular model, how that model, that sensitivity maps to the global framework. To test that, you can have your own branch, plot it, and then you know you can be sure that how this is how it will affect and so on. We would, for standard plots, we would like to have people to upload only the published results, which are you know already published and so on, so that.
But you could have a merge request, which is basically these are the results of my experiment. And at the moment, it's just my expected limits. But when it gets accepted, it's the actual ones.
That's something that you have to also figure out how to do that. You know, how do you need to have separate pages for that, or how exactly to do that? I mean, we have to see.
Clearly.
Yes, so thanks very much. That's interesting stuff. I'm just wondering about comparing to other types of efforts. So in the past, variously, have been efforts to bring data together in various forms. And HepData is one thing, and you know, Rivet is something that was pushed for a very long time. But even there, where you might say it's rather easier to get things together, there was quite a lot of effort that went into trying to get people to take up this type of thing. And it's, there's a lot more in Atlas than CMS, because some of the stuff came from within Atlas. So I just wondered what you thought about in those contexts, what you might have learned there. And then in addition, there are other, there are many tools around that bring things together to give you combined limits, phenomenological type of tools to say, okay, given all these results, how does this affect the parameter space of my new model? And there are lots of tools around that do that sort of thing. So how, what's your comment on that sort of picture?
So this is something which I thought a great detail, and this is why it was important for me when I was doing that. That okay, why would people would like to have a place like that which is sort of open? And it was important for me to have sort of an address which is universally acceptable in the sense. I mean, if I had hosted this in some GitHub.io or whatever, it would not be so unifying in a sense. But I thought that okay, having this particular thing, I mean, it gives it a sort of a good
enough.
I think
it sounds great, but
yeah.
You know, all the other stuff hosted
so,
by Durham.
So, of course, yeah. So I hope that would be basically something which would then. And then on the second question, if a lot of tools are there, mostly, I mean, from theorist community and so on, mostly offline tools, you download these scripts there. Like now, theorist community is what they have started doing was they have to update, upload their scripts on Zenodo and all that and so on. These scripts, they are absolutely important, and they should be integrated in the CI/CD pipelines to make this whole process automated. So they definitely make sense. They are important, and these people who are working on them are the experts of that. But those scripts should be extracted and be part of a common repository and integrated in a CI/CD pipeline. So even their job is easier. So when in the next conference like this, for example, this happened in the FIP workshop which we did. Gaia, she produces a lot of these FIP plots, global unified plots. She has some scripts and so on. But even then, the amount of work, for example, communicating with each experiment, having that particular result, using this script, being translated into the global unified plot, that was like months of work. And this should be automated. I mean, it should not be the custodian of all the work which goes in place.
It's a lot of work to automate. So, yeah. The work's going to happen somewhere. It's not
automation. Is not very important. I mean, putting that anyway. Script online in this system such that all the input data is gets analyzed, and then you know, CI/CD generates a plot which you then review and merge. This process is not problematic. The problematic part is to have the experts engage with us and basically make them understand that you know you still have your ownership of your work, you still have your ownership of your scripts, but it's good if you engage and then you know integrate this in this way so that your job also gets easier. So this is
I'm grinning.
So this is a challenging part. Yeah.
Have you talked to any of these theorists?
I did. I spoke with a variety of them. Everybody comes with this like huge list of problems which we have, and I try to find this common minimum program, sort of common minimum thing where we all can agree, and then take it from there.
I think that's a good comment. Minimal thing.
Yeah.
Because one thing that's useful is just having the collection together of all of the results so that you can all just listen, just to listen to papers that are relevant, because that's already a task that you have to go through in order to find that out. So, focusing on succeeding with minimal things and then grand future plans can be.
Yeah, great. Yeah, exactly. Can take time
down the line.
So, exactly. This is why we thought that okay, so we have good to have a prototype. Because I mean, before even building a prototype, I talked to some peers. giving them sort of my idea and vision of, okay, maybe we should have something like that. They would dump like 100 questions of that, which is like, you know, not sort of, I'm not in a position to answer that. So you have to be like, okay, let's build something, do something, maybe then it gets useful. Yeah.
Can I just, and just sort of follow up on like the sort of, what's the minimal amount? I mean, like, you have that nice little loop that you were showing at the beginning where you have like theory plus like theorists put together a picture, experimentalists then take it and then produce a limit, and then phenomenologists take those limits and then put together this, right? And then at the center of all of it can be actually, so maybe like this tool can move to maybe more as a central repository where, like, again, like if you're trying to sell this to like theorists or experimentalists or phenomenologists, it's just like, this tool makes everyone more productive. Theorists can have their models tested by experiments much more quickly. Like, again, as I can recall my own experience trying to put together a fermionic dark matter model for LZ, and it was a tremendous pain because I could not get my hands on, like, an ionization form factor that was needed in order for me to calculate the scattering cross section, which I needed to get the recoil energy spectrum, which I needed to get my model to run through a statistical analysis, right? So if I had that one piece of information, I could have had a paper out by now, but to this day, it's not done because we had to do all of this extra work twice. When if it was here, I could have just been like, boom, I'm going to take all of this citation to these theorists who else put it together, right? And then now we have this result that the phenomenologists can then use to put together a global synthesis. It's just like if people are going to be throwing up problems, like that's the sell that I think, like, if anyone has a problem with that picture, I don't think they're doing the scientific community any, like, they need to change their perspective. Like, like, and I think, like, there's, I think at this point, pretty solid, like, well-established, you know, bits of information that you need as an experimentalist to put together an analysis. Like I said, like, this ionization form factor, I wouldn't have needed that if I just had a nice set of recoil spectra to do that. So, like, you know, a theorist can sort of generalize their own work, plop it here, experimentalists can just go, right? Because it's, you know, if you have like a framework where it says, okay, like, this is what experimentalists need, theorists just put it to, like, get it together, put it in there, and then let them have at it. Then it's kind of just rigid, like, it's the expectation is set right from the beginning. And then you don't have to have, like, you know, this crazy, like, saga. So I think it's like you can determine what those minimal things are by just kind of thinking, okay, like, you know, what's the, like, if this is the loop, you know, what's the, you know, what do, like, experimentalists need?
Yeah.
What do phenomenologists need? And then just have that pipe in, and then that's your answer. I think that, like figuring that out isn't going to be, I don't think it would be as difficult as one might think if you just kind of keep this in mind.
Yeah.
So, I think this feeds back into what I was talking about being able to translate from one area to the other, right, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay. Any further questions? Any closing remarks from Steve or from James?
So, I mean, yeah, one thing is, a lot of us have seen the announcement, the mail from James. So I hope that we can continue this discussion into, I mean, let's see if we organize lunch or whatever, so that, I mean, we can see how we can progress and do and reach out and
if this is. As you know, Bridge, you're firmly on the agenda. I've made some notes, so there'll be a, we can follow up the main themes in, when I get around to arranging that, which looks like it'll be after the new year now, which is perhaps not surprising given the time of it is now.
Very good.
On that note,
thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so, how's the plan for long?
Yeah, if Bridge is going to lunch, you can join as well for informal discussion.
A little bit like that. You can invite this master. When it's open to all.